Welcome to Land Academy. This is the Cash Flow from Land Show, where we show you how to buy unwanted vacant land and sell it for more on the internet. I'm Steve Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We are your hosts. With over 15,000 completed transactions, we are the experts in this niche land flipping business.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com. All right, let's get this show started.
So your bio says, hey, I'm David Stein. I teach people about money, how it works, how to invest it, and how to live without worrying about it. Through stories, analogies, and easy-to-understand examples, I give individuals the tools and confidence they need to navigate an increasingly complex and unpredictable investing landscape. You know, this is what I found really interesting. This is what he did before he kind of retired. For close to two decades, I advised and managed assets for institutions and financial planners. I was the chief investment strategist and chief portfolio strategist at Fun Evaluation Group, LLC, a $33 billion investment advisory group, where I co-headed the 21-person research group. And it goes on to say some pretty impressive stuff. So, fill us in. What are you doing these days?
Well, I did retire as a professional investment advisor, and since then, I spent essentially a year calling myself retired, and the local paper asked me to start writing a personal finance column, and suddenly I found myself back to writing regularly on the economy, investing, and shortly after that, I launched a podcast, Money for the Rest of Us, which is done very well. It's a great platform just to teach people about what's going on. It's a weekly show. And then as listenership grew, listeners kept asking for more guidance, more help. And I didn't want to be a registered investment advisor again. So I launched an education platform on investing and the economy called the Money for the Rest of Us Hub. And so I spend my time, and it's still part-time, but I typically spend my week, when I'm working, just writing and teaching either through the podcast or through the membership site.
That's great. So, I mean, it sounds, Jill and I have a very similar experience. We tried to kind of tone it down for a while and ultimately ended up teaching through our company, Land Academy, teaching what we know best, buying and selling land.
Well, and it's a different dynamic. What I missed about the investment space was the teaching aspect. So I worked with a lot of institutional investors, so endowment and foundations and their investment committees and boards, and I kind of missed that. What I didn't miss was the day-to-day pressure of actually managing people's money, either institutions or through individuals through financial planners. And so this is a way that I can still give back, still help without having to feel – essentially still let the individuals make their own investment decisions as opposed to me actually pulling the trigger and looking at their accounts on a day-by-day basis.
You know, I love it, David. It sounds like we have a lot in common because that's your story is a little bit like us. You think you're retired and you're just going to kind of coast, but you're probably that kind of got that personality where you really just can't sit still. You know, and I appreciate too what you said about, you know, the giving back. That's part of what we're doing now. And it's just is so much more fun watching other people be successful than even my own success. You know, it's like, you know, parent pride.
Well, absolutely. And you realize people, they just need some guidance. They need some help. They need to, you know, sometimes they just need a mentor to sort of guide them along, and then they do very well. I mean, especially in the investment space, most people or many people don't necessarily trust an advisor to turn everything over to them. They want to have the control themselves, but they're seeking help so they can maintain that control, but still get insights from professionals or others. But ultimately, they feel very comfortable making the final investment decision on their own.
Yep, exactly. I love that. I was going to ask you. So, like, how many people are you mentoring? I mean, is it a small group that you just kind of help along, or is it anybody who's asked for it?
No, the show itself, Money for the Rest of Us, gets about 20,000 people or listeners per episode or downloads per episode. And so, I mean, that's a broader group. And the, and those that want more specific guidance, there's about 350 members on the Money for the Rest of Us Hub. And it's sort of, people can do it monthly. Some, you know, with any type of site like that, you have people coming in and out. But generally, it's continued to grow. And there's 350 members at this point.
That's pretty impressive. How many? When did you start doing this? When did you, let's say, launch the site and the podcast?
The podcast 2 years old, and the education sites, the platform's about 18 months old. Wow, and it's like anything. It grows sort of just person by person recommending it. And so that's been good.
That's fantastic. So where do you see it in 5 years? Do you continue to see it grow?
Hopefully, but it might. This is a lifestyle business for me. So this is not something that I want to grow to thousands of members. I like keeping it small. I don't have any help. I don't have any type of virtual assistants or employees at this point. So I kind of try to leverage technology as much as I can. When people email me, I email them back. And as long as I can keep that interaction, I'll keep doing it. So I don't have any huge, I mean, I already grew an investment firm with my partners and sold that. And so I don't have any desire to build a big enterprise. I just like having a little lifestyle business where we can help individuals out.
I have somewhat of a personal question. I wonder what it is about the Pacific Northwest that makes all you guys so calm up there.
I don't know. I used to have clients back east, and they would say the same thing. I mean, I'm a naturally calm person anyway, but there is something to be said, because I had my shot to work in New York. My old investment firm was based in Ohio, but I've been in Idaho for 15 years, telecommuted for the vast majority of those, and so there's plenty of space out here. There's plenty of clean air. And plenty of places you go just to think. And so there's sort of not that. I love New York. It's my favorite town. I love the Northeast U.S., but it's nice to come back and be a little more relaxed, that's for sure.
But, you know, David, doesn't a healthy bank balance help calm you down?
Yes. Right. I mean, and that was part of it. I mean, I left. You know, one reason I left my old firm was it had done well. We hit, you know, I kind of hit that number that I needed for my nest egg to not have to, I mean, certainly to manage the investments prudently, but not have to be fighting day to day, I guess, in terms of worrying about whether we were going to make it or not. And that does reduce it. I mean, there I admire entrepreneurs and those that struggle, because there is a great deal of pressure. And so this little, you know, what I'm doing now, right, it if it fails, I'm going to be fine. So that does take a little bit of the pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Boy, we should.
But it also means that I don't have an alternative objective, right? I mean, I can be independent. Now, I don't take sponsors on my podcast or anything like that, because I don't need to. I can just sort of do it in a way that's aligned with the listeners.
Boy, I mean, the more we talk here, the more our stories are pretty similar. We don't take sponsors either. At least currently, and our numbers are about the same. And, you know, our normal operation, our land investing operation, just continues to run in the background. We don't try to grow it the way that we used to, but it's certainly a good paycheck. And we focus more now on just helping people learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Right.
What are your three kids doing now?
Well, I have the two are in college, so, and then the other is doing an internship in audio engineering. So we've been empty nesters for all of about 2 weeks now. Our youngest just moved onto campus, so we're and we just moved out to our farm here in Teton Valley. So we've been here 2 weeks. You know, this is some ground, about 80 acres that we've owned for 5 years. And sort of use it as a second home, and sold our primary home and moved out here. So my wife LaPril and I we're definitely in transition. So it's been interesting, because it's beautiful out here, but not having somebody, you know, a bunch of people like you're used to in and out is quite the adjustment.
Oh, we're pretty jealous over here. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, right? They're on their way. So you did your job.
They are. And they're doing well. They're doing well.
That's good.
Sometimes when the dust settles, you got to talk to your wife, man.
That's right. Well, I actually mentioned this to her. It's been 24 years since it's just been you and I. But what makes that transition easier is I've worked out of my house for most of the past 15 years. So it's not like they left and we were strangers. We spent plenty of time together. And so that makes, and we travel a lot. So we get along just fine.
Did the audio engineer put you up to this whole thing?
No. He got into it after I did. I mean, I am by no means an audiophile. The podcast, I don't know how you do yours, but I have my mic and I record right into GarageBand and I throw some intro music on and that's it. So it's a pretty straightforward show, 25 minutes. I don't do interviews. And so at some point he'll come in and help out.
You just do it. Do you do it by yourself then?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I just do it.
Do you script it first or do you just say whatever comes into your head? I got to listen to it now.
It's partially scripted. I use my weekly article that I write for the local papers as sort of the base script. And your typical podcast is about 3,000 words. I'll have maybe 1,000-word script and then sort of add stories and anecdotes from there.
As you can tell, David, we have no script. We never do. We have like loose guidelines that we go with. And that's it.
That's saying a lot, actually. Did you ever hear Car Talk on NPR?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we model our whole show after. Car Talk only about land.
But if it's an interview, it's easier to do that, right? If you're talking to yourself, then there's not somebody else to fill in the gaps. You have to a little more structure.
That's true. Because at least, yeah, there is the two of us, and that makes it really nice.
All right. Can I read your top 10 things that people probably don't know about you?
Yeah, go ahead. That's fine.
So on his website, he says, my favorite places to visit are Japan and the Yucatan Peninsula and Maine. To three completely different places. Number two is I've flown close to 2 million miles, mostly next to the window in the exit row. So you can tell, Jill, he's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Piled up at least 1 million of those miles writing a novel over a 4-year stretch of time. Finished the book and never published it. Man, this just keeps coming with more stuff that we have in common. And although he did teach you how to write, that's great. Number four is applied and rejected for law school at Harvard, Yale, Virginia, and Michigan. Hey, you know what? I got rejected at U of M too. I took 33% pay cut when I took my first investment job, and later when I was a managing partner, I rewrote a compensation plan for future employees so they didn't have to take the same pay cuts when they joined the firm. I preferred vintage clothes and the ones and new ones, and buy most of my clothes on eBay and in vintage stores. You know, I'll tell you in a minute, but about 2 weeks ago, Jill made me go buy all new clothes because she told me I look homeless when I'm not at work. I've been a road biker since I was four. I've owned only 5 road bikes. This is eerie because I do that too. Let's see. I used to speak Spanish. So did I. Semi-fluent. I'm not that at all. After 3 beers, I think I can sort of speak it. Number nine, when the three kids were younger, this is really interesting. This is what I found the most interesting in the whole thing. When my 3 kids were younger, they each got to take a solo trip with me every year to a far off U.S. city and occasionally overseas. Now we all travel together whenever we can. Jill, isn't that just fantastic?
I love it. That's really cool.
So what were some of the highlights of those trips?
Well, just usually when they turn 10, it's nice to spend one-on-one time with them, because when you have a group of kids, when they're alone, just one-on-one, you just get to know them a lot better. And you know, usually since I traveled all the time, I had frequent flyer miles, so that made it easier. But certainly some of the most memorable trips was taking my son Brett. When he turned 10, he said, where do you want to go in the world? And he chose Australia because he wanted to meet Steve Irwin. This was before Steve Irwin passed away. So we went to the east coast of Australia and up to Steve Irwin's So it was the Crocodile Hunter, I think, zoo. And it went up and snorkeled up there, the Great Barrier Reef, et cetera. So that was fun. And just spending time. And we still travel. We still travel a lot together. Once I quit my last job, we spent 3 months traveling in Asia and Europe together as a family, and still take the occasional trip. I had promised my one son that if Cuba ever opened up, that we would head to Cuba. And turns out now anyone can go to Cuba, but just even earlier this year, if you were a journalist, mm-hmm. you could basically go to Cuba. So he and I went to Cuba, and it turns out being a podcaster counts as a journalist. So, and it's really easy to go to Cuba. Right. You just sort of self-nominate yourself and say, yeah, I'm a journalist. And so we booked our chartered flights and went over for a couple of weeks.
You know, I don't think you get to be where you are without issuing a good workaround once in a while. I've always thought of myself as a journalist also.
Oh, exactly. And it turns out when you go to Cuba, is nobody even asks for your paperwork. You just need, if you have your passport and, you know, they just like any other country, you fill out a tourist visa essentially. But we had these signed affidavits thinking they were going to, prove to us you're a journalist. Nobody asked for it. So we just walked into the country and walked right out.
That's really funny. I love it. Good thing you got back out.
it was fine. That's amazing. Crazy. Wonderful, wonderful people.
Yeah, you know,
it is definitely a time warp when it comes to they're struggling, that's for sure.
How much time do you think we have to get down there before it really changes? Do you think it's going to be a while? Because we really want to go
before it becomes Miami.
Right.
I'd go this year.
Okay.
I mean, literally, because once you start, it's really challenging, because now that commercial airlines are starting to be able to. And I'm not sure who's flying there now, because before you had to have a commercial flight. But there's already plenty of tourists there. So this don't. In fact, you feel way more like there's tourists in Cuba than if you go to Mexico. You can go places in Mexico. There aren't any Americans or Europeans. But Cuba, there's just a lot of tourists. And there have been. There just haven't been a lot of Americans. And so, but it's still, what's fascinating is literally you have these old cars just driving around everywhere, and the entire infrastructure is dilapidating. What the sad part is, as more and more tourists come in, food prices keep going further and further up, and the economy they haven't modernized their economy enough to support that. And so inflation is really accelerating and it's hurting individuals there.
That's crazy.
They're in a tough situation.
I was hearing too, I think Airbnb recently, like in the last, I don't know how many weeks, or recently opened up there too, so that's probably going to change it.
They did. Also. Well, that's what we did. I had no idea. It's like, how am I going to book a hotel? Because I'm thinking,
right,
this is travel in Mexico 25 years ago, where you got to call or try to figure out. And lo, because we've been heavy users of Airbnb over the years, and sure enough, you can get Airbnb, and it was fine. Now on their end, nobody's allowed to have internet in their home. And so you go to the into the parks, and they're allowed to be on the internet. They just can't have it in their home. And so people there that have Airbnb are going to the park to get Wi-Fi so they can do their bookings or whatever. And so it's logistically, it's a little more difficult for people there to do it. But if you are a user of Airbnb, it was as straightforward as anywhere else. It worked out great, because then you can stay in your homes. And that's what's actually helped Cuba support the number of tourists. They do not have anywhere near the hotel infrastructure for the number of tourists there. So the vast majority live or stay at people's homes through essentially the bed and breakfast type thing. So the Airbnb was a great fit for them, because that's what Cuba has done for decades now.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a full-blown repressive situation, and it's really too bad.
Well, and it's the only business that you're allowed to have. As a small business, you can run a restaurant, and you can run a homestay type bed and breakfast, and now you can run little sort of side cart stores like on the street, but that's it. And so it makes it tough. Everybody has their little side gig. I've never seen a more entrepreneurial people, and it's amazing. Everybody has their thing that they're doing, because that's what they do to survive.
Really interesting. Hey, David, let's get back to business for a second. So you have these incoming new people who want to they really want to learn from you. Is there a couple of traits that you see that are huge misconceptions that you really have to kind of undo right when they come through the door, the figurative door?
Well, I do everything I can to not attract people that want to be traders. I'm a long-term investor. My basic investment philosophy is primarily buy and hold, but adjust your allocation based on market conditions. And so be willing to make adjustments based on valuations, based on economic trends, or based on what I call market internals, so the level of trend and momentum. But what we're looking for is regime changes. In other words, if the U.S. and the world is going into a recession, the typical loss has been about 46% in terms of the global stock market. And so it's these type of things that you want to avoid and not be sort of trading currencies or things like that, because it's essentially a loser's game. And so it's sort of balancing out not being completely buy and hold passive, because I don't think mm-hmm. that's necessarily the answer,
right.
Nor being an active trader and trying to outsmart right. the market. And so it's sort of, as you bring people in, just try to attract the people that kind of want to go for that happy medium. They're willing to rely primarily on asset allocation, primarily on passive investments, but make adjustments based on market conditions. And then if they're going to try to do something active, do it more sort of like what you're doing with your business on the private side. You know, find the particular real estate deal if you're interested in that, or a land deal, or things of that sort. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to do. Don't have all of your financial assets yeah. tied into the financial markets.
Yeah, we call it, I call it buckets, but there's got to be a bucket for everything. Sometimes there's a super high risk bucket, there's the money in the bank bucket, and everything in between.
Well, right. You want different drivers of return, and you don't always know which is going to do well in any particular year, but you also want pockets of independence. So one reason we own a farm is so that we have some land and we have something that with food storage completely separate from the financial system, and not because we're expecting or forecasting or hoping for some type of economic meltdown, but just so we're prepared if something goes awry that's unexpected.
You know, I bet you some money that you probably paid too much for those 80 acres. That's what we teach. I'm just joking.
Well,
it's for my listeners.
Not necessarily. We bought it. We paid, if you base it, when I used to invest in at my old firm, right, you'd have these timber investors. So they would go out, timber managers, and they would buy timber properties. And they would always have a segment called higher and better use. And this was land that is worth more than it is strictly as timber. And so when you have 80 acres that are, you know, look down and overlook the Teton Mountain Range, that's higher and better use property. So it's worth more than it is as a dry farm. But we didn't pay that much more. You know, typically dry farm acreage here is 1,500, 2,000 an acre. And by dry farm, not irrigated, because in Idaho, most land is irrigated. Now, we ended up about 3,000 an acre. So we did fine. But it has
emptied. It's great, actually.
It's still... Well, I mean, compared to at the top of the bubble, things were selling at $10,000, $20,000 an acre here in Teton Valley.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is the bubble here was absolutely amazing. They platted an 80-year supply of building lots in this valley in terms
wow.
of – and so we bought for the long term. You know, we bought one because we'd looked for years, because it's a beautiful spot. But it's by no means, you know, this was not something we were going to flip in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So we're going to hold this for 20 years and wait for the next bubble. In the meantime, we'll enjoy it.
Are the counties managing all those separate APNs, though, those separate assessor parcel numbers? That's a lot.
They are, but, I mean, they're in the process. There's people that, you know, are trying to get them to vacate the subdivisions. I mean, we have behind our 80 acres, just to see how mismanaged it was. There were three subdivisions right in this area with about 250 lots. And one of the requirements is they needed a well, the community well system, community water systems to support it, right? Well, they couldn't, they started selling lots before they had found enough water to do this. And so they essentially have one well with a permit for about 20 homes. The rest of them are never going to be built on because they haven't been able to find water. And by now, one subdivision has been vacated. The other is up for sale. And we've looked at it. I mean, it's basically 150 acres. They want $300,000. And the challenge is they've already sold four of the 150 lots. Because at those prices, essentially, it's almost dry farm prices.
Right.
But you have to go find those people that own those four lots and either get with the county to kind of replat the whole subdivision. And it's something we're, you know, we've toyed with. But at the end of the day, we've bought land, we bought real estate. But as you know, it takes some work. And so it's a question of whether we want to do the work or not. The legwork, really, to work through the county and all the planning issues and such.
Right. David Stein of Money for the Rest of Us. It was fantastic to speak with you. Please let us know where we can find you on the internet before we part ways here.
Sure. You can find me, the home of the podcast, and the best place to reach me is at moneyfortherestofus.net. I'm also on Twitter at JD Stein.
Thanks so much for speaking about this. Have a good time.
Thanks, great. David.
Thanks, Steve and Joe.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com.
If you want to get involved or you need more information about our profitable, niche real estate operation, call 480-467-0359. You just might get Jill at the other end of the line.
LandAcademy.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.